You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we can all use a little time out of our day to relax and enjoy a cup of coffee and a snack. We'll learn some lessons on how to unwind from Sweden on Food Friday.
Right now, with swimming season around the corner, there are still people who are afraid to go in the water all these years later because of Jaws. But our next guest says we can better understand shark behavior to prevent shark attacks. Makes the case for shark conservation as a key part of ocean ecosystem health.
Brian Scarry is with us now. He's an award-winning National Geographic photojournalist and a leading voice for shark and marine conservation. His work is featured in the current National Geographic series, The Summer of Sharks. Brian, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here, Veronica. Thanks.
Well, you've been involved with shark conservation efforts, marine conservation efforts for years. With sharks, I understand you swim with them, you photograph them. So as someone who has lived pretty closely with sharks over the years, what have you seen that makes you love them?
Well, you know, as a photographer, they are a magical subject. They truly represent this terrific blend of grace and power. They exude this great confidence, but yet they move very elegantly and exquisitely through the water. So photographically, they're a terrific subject to return to time and time again, but you know, there's been somewhat of an evolution in my career with many animals in the ocean, just beginning out as a photographer many years ago, wanting to make pretty pictures of them, and then seeing that these animals are in trouble, that they're facing a lot of peril out there in the ocean and on our planet, and wanting to sort of give them a bit of a makeover to show them as something more than just a one-dimensional monster.
And how do you do that? I mean, especially after kind of the bad PR that Jaws gave sharks, and which reverberated for a really long time, some echo still today. I mean, how do you make the shark over into something that people have that same feeling that you have about it, something that needs protection?
Right. Well, you know, for me, I think it's about portraying them accurately, which means, you know, I'm not trying to make them out to be something that they're not. They are indeed apex predators. They are, you know, a fearsome animal, something that is to be respected. But I think for a very long time, sharks have been seen sort of in that one-dimensional view, that they are this shadowy villain that is swimming beneath the surface just waiting to eat you. And, you know, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. They're not house pets. They're not kittens and puppies that we want to necessarily hug, but yet they are not villains and one-dimensional creatures. So for me, photographically, it's about showing them as something magnificent, showing that each species, and there's probably over 400 or close to 500 species of sharks, but to show that each one has unique characteristics, that they have amazing biology, and, you know, although we may never feel the same way about a fish that we do about some warm, fuzzy mammal, we can certainly, I think, appreciate them and regard them with this degree of respect.
And in terms of, you know, swimming season being around the corner, and inevitably there are stories of shark attacks every summer, what does science tell us about shark behavior that could minimize that kind of story and that kind of incident?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, whenever we go out into the wild, there's always the potential for risk, whether we're walking in a forest or swimming in the ocean. And when we go into a place like the ocean where sharks might be around, I think there is a sense of risk, but there's also some things that we can do. I think researchers have showed us that if you're going in the water maybe at dusk, I mean, sometimes it seems that sharks, particular species, like to feed at dusk, or if somebody is fishing nearby, I think a lot of the attacks that have happened in recent years, we've seen that either the person who got bit or somebody was near somebody fishing, you know, so if you're surf casting and you're fishing and you've got a string of fish that are bleeding into the water, well, that might attract sharks. If the visibility is bad and a shark might mistake you for something else that they're normally going to eat, a type of fish, if the vis isn't very good, those are things that we can do, you know, prevent those attacks or prevent those bites that sometimes occur, is to just be sort of a little cognizant of what we might be doing. You know, if you're in a place where certain species that feed on marine mammals, if you're in a place where great white sharks might be seen and there's seals around and you're on a boogie board and it sort of is reminiscent of a seal from below, it looks like a silhouette of a seal, that might not be a good behavior to engage in. So, you know, I think there are things we can do. But at the end of the day, you know, going into the ocean, if there's a sharky sort of place around, is not without risk.
We're talking with Brian Skerry right now from National Geographic, where he's a photojournalist and a leading voice for shark and marine conservation. His work is featured in the current National Geographic series called The Summer of Sharks. And in terms of seeing sharks for their majesty and not just as this predator, it seems as though the tide could be turning on that a bit. Brian, I know that there was a particular great white shark. So this is the big one, the one that Jaws sort of demonized. There's a shark that got a name, Mary Jane. Can you tell us about her?
Well, yeah. A number of researchers, particularly on the east coast of the United States in recent years, have been tagging animals, and oftentimes they name them. And I think that this helps the public sort of give some personality to these animals. And an animal like Mary Lee or others that have been tagged on the east coast, you can now track through websites where the satellite tagging data will show this animal's movements and migrations. But I think what this sort of science has helped to do is give some personality to these animals. You know, a scientific paper was just published about a year or two ago by a researcher in Massachusetts that stated that great white sharks, he believes, are living well into their 70s. It was previously thought that they only lived maybe 30 or 35 years old. But now we sort of have this parallel with human lifetime, you know, age and 70 years old. And you've got a solitary predator for large part, a solitary animal that's out there migrating thousands of miles throughout the Atlantic Ocean. And at times they're up in the very northern reaches of the Atlantic, and other times they're down south in Florida or Gulf of Mexico. But, you know, what wisdom might this 18-foot-long, you know, several thousand-pound animal that's in her 60s or 70s contain? You know, they might have wisdom of the ocean that we can't even imagine. So I think those kinds of things like tagging and naming animals and tracking their movements helps people to see them in a new way.
Let's circle back to the beginning of our conversation. You talked about seeing not just the shark for a photographic opportunity, but seeing them as an animal in peril. What challenges and perils do sharks face around the world?
Well, you know, today, right now, Veronica, in excess of 100 million sharks are being killed every single year. And that's been going on for some time. It's a staggering number, and it's almost hard to comprehend, but it's a fact. And the reason that 100 million sharks are being killed is oftentimes just for their fins, for the soup fin trade that's, you know, popular in Asia. And the methods of catching these sharks can be everything from long lines where, you know, 100 miles of lines will be put out with thousands of baited hooks or gill nets or many other methods that are being used to kill sharks. And when you think about the role that predators play in keeping an ecosystem healthy, you realize that the notion of killing 100 million sharks just doesn't seem wise. The ocean is so important to our existence. Whether you're living in a landlocked state like Wisconsin, you still have to recognize that every other breath that a human being takes, more than 50% of the oxygen we breathe, comes from the ocean. And, you know, killing 100 million sharks is probably not in our own best interest.
So as you said, here we are in Wisconsin, a landlocked state. Is there anything that we can do here to help with shark conservation and marine conservation?
Well, I think, you know, as with so many things, it's about awareness, becoming educated about these things. Obviously, if you have an opportunity to order shark fin soup, I would say don't do that. But let your voice be known. I mean, we can elect people who care about ocean conservation and conservation of the natural world in general, who support, you know, the notion of climate change, which is having a devastating effect on the ocean, and ocean acidification, and all of these things that ultimately do affect us. I mean, it shouldn't be only about our own self-interest, but at the end of the day, that's what motivates people. And I think, you know, the choices we make using single-use plastic containers, you know, there's a lot of plastics in the ocean. Reports came out recently that said that by 2050 there'll be more plastic in the ocean than there are fish. All of this stuff matters to the health of the sea, to the health of sharks and the animals that live there. So I think being aware, being educated, making good decisions as a consumer and you know, acting politically all make a really important difference in the state of our planet.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Veronica. I appreciate it.
That's Brian Scarry, journalist with National Geographic, photojournalist, and a leading voice for shark and marine conservation. His work is featured in the current National Geographic series. It's called The Summer of Sharks.
Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. We'll learn about the art of taking a proper coffee break, like they do in Sweden, and we've got recipes to go along with it. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.